Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we got another reminder last night, and we will again tonight, of a very, very dark part of Irish history. I know it doesn't sit easily with a lot of people, but it needs to be talked about and highlighted once again. And that is, of course, the treatment of so many people in, well, mother and baby homes. We know that, and there's more going to come in relation to that in the future. But also the institutional abuse by members of the religious order in state industrial schools. And there was, of course, a redress board established to compensate victims of abuse in these schools. It all came as a result of Mary Raftery, the late Mary Raftery States of Fear programme, as we know, back in 1999. And then we had the apology from Bertie Ahern's government. We had the establishment then of the Lafoy Commission to become the Ryan Commission. And alongside it was the Redress Board. And a really, really profoundly disturbing, but insightful and breathtaking piece of TV was part one of it was broadcast last night, simply called Redress. And I'm told there's going to be groundbreaking revelations again in the second part the episode at 9:35 tonight on RT1 television. And basically, the people in the documentary, in this two-part documentary, some of them whom we know from speaking out about their time in these schools going back the years, they were on to talk about their treatment in front of the Redress Board and the non-disclosure agreements that was foisted upon them, and how they have not received, to use that terrible word, but closure. In fact, it's traumatised them even more, their appearance and their treatment in front of the Redress Board. And that is the focus of this, as we can say, fairly groundbreaking piece of television. And a lot of our listeners were watching it and contacted us today about it. Catherine Coffey O'Brien. Catherine, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, and thank you for replying to my call.
No problem. You watched this programme last night. How did it make you feel, Catherine?
Well, obviously, there was an awful lot of trigger factors, but I'd like to say something from the onset. I would be very, very concerned for the very vulnerable survivors. I myself have been traumatised from it, but we have to put that to one side and approach this from a logical and a rational point of view. If you look at the Ryan report, i.e. the Lafoy Commission, and you look at the McAleese report, and you look into the Mother and Baby Commission, the primary factor there is that every time a survivor gives evidence into a commission ran by the Irish state, there's confidentiality agreements attached. Second of all, by their own words last night, former politicians of this country, they failed miserably, survivors and the Irish taxpayers, because the confidentiality agreement had far-reaching repercussions regarding the responsibility, not just liability, the responsibility of the Catholic Church and its industry, the conveyor belt of the institutions that went on. And I mean the intertransference, the diaspora of institutional abuse that went on. So when you ask me how I feel very critical, I feel cynical. We speak about history in Ireland, but it depends on the public representatives that are in office and what narrative it suits. We recognise 1916, and rightly so. We recognise the Free State. We recognise every other part of history in Ireland, but yet, the Free State, unfortunately, is built on a theology that has destroyed, destroyed generations of families. My mother was raised in the institutions along with her brothers, and I have an aunt that's buried in an unmarked grave. We haven't even tipped the iceberg about the unmarked grave in the unmarked graves in the properties that the orders sold, without any obligation in marking those graves.
And the purpose, as far as I understand it, of the redress board, as it was called, was to save survivors the trauma of having to go to court to seek some sort of comment. But what happened was that these were almost, listening to the survivors talking, that the redress board, where they signed these NDAs saying you cannot talk about how much you received here, you cannot talk about the process here, and you cannot talk again about the treatment you received in these schools, nor reveal where you actually were. Now, before the redress board actually happened, quite a lot of survivors who spoke out, particularly those that appeared on States of Fear, obviously had identified what happened to them, where it happened, and by whom. But the purpose of the redress board, am I right in saying it, Catherine, was to save people the trauma of a court-like system,
no,
a court-like interrogation. But that's actually the way it ended up.
No, it wasn't. It might have started, the ideology might have started out like that.
Mm.
But we remember, even the dogs on the street understand that most survivors weren't educated in the institutions. They hadn't a clue about legalities or about confidentiality agreements. They hadn't a clue about any of the process.
But wasn't redress a vehicle to fast-track compensation due to people for the treatment by the state following the state's apology?
The bottom end of the line here is all survivors, they never got an informed choice that there was any other option. They never got an informed choice about seeking justice. They were basically told, take what's given to you and go. And, oh, by the way, sign this before you go, because no prosecutions. And another thing, it's very important that this part of history be taught in the universities, the secondary schools. So we're mindfully... We're not victims. We are survivors.
Okay, I want to bring Morris...
We were ill-informed. We were not given an informed choice. And that is the point, the principle. We were institutionalised. We were told when to get it from childhood, early childhood. Mm. And remember, I'm intergenerational. My mother was raised there before me. And if they did such a great job of my mother, why did I end up in the same industrial school she was in? You were told to get up, when to eat, when to pray, when to clean, when to go down to the nursery to look after the babies, when to go out in the yard, when to go and collect your set of clothes that you had for the week and the one pair of knickers that you got and the one pair of socks you got for the week. You were told sometimes when you were going to get beaten and you were told seven times a day you were nothing. So we were never given an informed choice growing up. Our autonomy was taken from us then, and it was taken from us in regarding the redress system. Mm. A lot of us were triggered, not a lot of us, we were all triggered when the redress system came out. And like when the lady said there was different reactions. Some people were angry, some people were intimidated, some people... I mean, post-traumatic stress disorder is rampant and mental health issues are rampant within the survivor community.
Yeah.
And to be honest about it, and I have an awful lot of issues about the framework regarding when it comes to the representation of survivors. It seems to be any Joe Soap can run a survivor support group. They don't have to be Garda vetted or anything.
Okay.
And realistically, when you're dealing with survivors... They have specific needs.
Sure.
We have a very vulnerable community.
I believe that there was a counselling service set up in conjunction with all of this.
Which was funded by the Catholic Church.
Right.
So would you... Look, realistically, I'm a very rational person. And I'm not going to come on here today and insult you or your listeners by going over what happened to me in my life. I know what happened to me. And ironically, I wouldn't be half the person I am, except for what happened to me. But I educated myself. But I am one of few.
Well,
There's an awful lot of survivors. I've buried so many survivors that were left in destitute.
Well, Catherine, we have some others here, and I just want to maybe let our listeners hear that. Stay with me, Catherine, because we have... Oh, Morris is there. Morris, good afternoon to you. Morris O'Connell. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon to you.
Morris.
Hi, Catherine.
You know Catherine. Both in Tralee. Your story, Morris.
Well, my story basically is that I was taken off my mother at the age of 6 months because they accused her of not looking after me properly. So they put my mother into a mental institute and they put me into an industrial school.
And can what age was your mother, Morris?
My mother would be 19.
And
she would be roughly about 19.
Okay, and the phrase at the time, she had a child out of wedlock. Was that it?
She had a child, but out of wedlock. But she was married. But my father was a thundering alcoholic.
Right. No, I was just wondering, was that why she was marked? In other words, that they were looking for
that's
a way.
That's exactly of, why yeah. she was marked.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know? And then the cruelty man came. You probably heard that word before.
No, go
which
on.
Would be, do you know, like the protection for children.
Right.
The ISPCC.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And they came and they got a bounty for every child that they could take off the streets.
God. So you were torn from your mother and you were put into... At what age?
I was 6 months old.
6 months. And you were brought to Tralee?
I was brought to Tralee.
And who reared you there then?
Well, I wouldn't call it raised.
Yeah.
I would call it dragged up.
Yeah.
But by the nuns of Nazareth House.
Sisters of Mercy.
The Sisters of Mercy.
Until what age?
I was there until I was 11 years of age. And then when I got too troublesome for them, I was farmed out to Carrisavine.
And you say farmed out to Carrisavine?
Well, put it this way, there was 12 of us put up against the wall. And the strongest one was picked out of the lot to work on the farm.
Whose farm?
My foster parents.
Okay. And so you, it was almost like a, you know, slavery in a term, put up against the wall and the strongest one picked to go and work on the farm at 11 years of age.
Basically, you were like a horse. They'd look at your teeth and they'd look you up and down and, do you know what I mean? Like the nuns. And then they'd say, look, this is the strongest one for you. But I will say that the foster parents that I did have, they never abused me. It was more like I abused them because I couldn't handle being in a home with foster parents. And then at 13 years of age, because of my trouble, I was taken out of there and put into a reformatory school in Dublin until I was 17. And I got no education, no nothing, all the way up.
That was my next question. Were you educated? You were just worked and abused?
Just worked and abused, basically. That's all. With most of us, I'd say 85% of us, are self-educated. I learned how to read and write on my own. And I was 15 years of age when I started.
And at 17, where did you go then?
I was kicked out of the industrial school because there was no more money to be taken from the state for me. So then I was homeless in Tralee for about 3 years. And then, God rest my foster parents, they were walking the streets one day and saw me. And they asked me, would I ever come back to them? So it was better than nothing, and they were always good to me. So I looked after them until the day they died.
And had you any blood relations at that stage?
I had no blood relation, no.
And
no blood relation.
Where was your mother?
My mother came to look for me when I was 4 years of age.
She would have been 23 or so.
She would have been, yeah. And she was told that I was being fostered out and my brother, who was biracial, was going to a solicitor. And she wasn't allowed to take me. So then, about 15 years ago to 20 years ago, I tracked down my mother. And she told me that after the mental hospital, she was raped in there. So she had a biracial child. Then she was put in there, from there into the Mandolin laundries. Now, I only met my mother 3 weeks before she died of cancer at the age of 51.
See, this is... Can I say something here?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
Well, it's not taken into consideration and was never taken into consideration is the intergenerational. The likes of myself and Morris and others that had mothers that were in industrial schools, laundries, etc. We were completely... what happened was we were never asked about any of that in front of the redress board. Like, I came from a family of 13 aunts and uncles. I'm an only granddaughter. I never knew my... I never had any family members. I was robbed of that because all my uncles were, like Morris, put into the industrial school, farmed out, and when they were no more good, then they went into a mental asylum. They died down.
And, Morris, can I just come back to you? Because you then, obviously, with that story, you were the sort of... You were entitled to receive the apology from Bertie Ahern on behalf of the state back in 99 or 2000, around that time. Then the redress board was set up, the Lafoy stroke Ryan Commission was established. How did you hear about your entitlement to appear there to tell your story? How did that come about?
Well, it came about with a place called Right of Place First Chance.
Yes.
Right, they set up meetings all over Ireland.
Okay.
And then they had solicitors there, right?
Yeah.
And because of we not being educated and stuff like that, they actually pointed us towards the solicitor that we were to take.
Okay. To give you some sort of legal representation and
direction. To give us some
direction.
Sort of legal representation. And but when my time came for the redress, the solicitor rang me and he says, oh, you're up on Tuesday. Now, this would be 2004.
Yeah.
He said, you'll be up there. And I said to him, can I come up? And he said, no. He said, what you do now, Morris? He said, you sit down on the couch and wait for my phone call. So I said, no, I want to come up. And he says, no. He says, you're better off because we're going to the confidentiality side. He said, you're better off sitting there. And he said, sure. His exact words were, sure. Look at the amount of money you're going to make just sitting on a couch. So the next minute, anyway, about 4 or 5 hours later, he rang me with an offer. And then he turned around and I said, no, I don't want it. And he said, look, I'm here all morning, Morris, and I was here yesterday. And he said, I've seen people reject the first offer, and if you don't take it, they will have the offer again.
Oh. But this obviously, it had to be about more than just financial, about more than just money. Morris.
For us it was about more than money, but for the government it was about saving the shilling, saving the pound.
Yeah. No, but the whole part, what I'm saying is that, that, you know, handing you out money, it doesn't matter how much you were going to get, that wasn't going to suddenly cure and get rid of and exercise all of those memories.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, Catherine.
And you see, the point is that...
I went to the investigative committee. I went on the onus that I wanted the two particular nuns, and Mass, you know one of them.
I do.
I wanted, and her name is infamous.
Right.
I wanted the order to be accountable for what happened to me. Myself, I didn't even take my mother's rearing into account.
So survivors.
And after I gave my submission, after I sat in front of them and gave them, and it was on my records. It's on my records. The abuse was because the guards were called in, and the guards said you must have done something to deserve that at the time of the abuse. And I got educated in my late 30s. But this is before I was ever educated. But I said, she did wrong, I said, and I want, I said, they promised me at the investigative committee that they would bring, that there would be a thorough investigation and that the perpetrators of the abuse would be dealt with in a court of law.
Okay, can I just bring Miriam in here as well? Miriam, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Damien, good afternoon. Thanks for having us on.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't watch it last night, but I watched it on RT Player today, and it really is, it's only really the tip of the iceberg. I don't know what's going to happen tonight and what are they breaking the silence. Are people going to break the confidentiality? But I know when I got mine in, I actually went about it well before 1999. I had written to a solicitor in Kerry, and one solicitor particularly got back to me, and I met her in 99. Basically, I was brought up in an industrial school in Tralee for almost 12 years. And I just told her what happened, and she was kind of really sympathetic at the time. And she said, no. And then few years had passed, and it, and I, 99, I approached her again, and there was a totally different perspective of what the way she spoke to me before that. She's, I wanted to go to court. I did just wanted to go to court. Bring them to court, everybody.
Now, you went in front of the redress board, and what were you told?
I was told about this was Morris and Catherine, true writer, plays second chance, and I said,
But these
down.
NDAs, the non-disclosure agreement. Now, I don't want to.
I didn't know anything. We were never ever told about that, because the same thing happened to me that happened to Morris there. I had been in Dublin on the Monday, and met with a solicitor, and three or four times went up. I met four different solicitors.
So you were represented. You were represented at the redress board, but you didn't actually appear in front of it, did you yourself?
No,
physically.
No.
Okay. So you basically got a payment and were told, take it or leave it, sign this, and that's the end of it. We don't want to ever hear from you
and
again.
Damien, we were categorised. You know, everything was a point system, and I think for me, why should they put points on us? We were numbered all our life, right? And all of a sudden, you're going to get up to 30 points and you get that much. You get 20 points of severity of abuse, mental abuse, this, and went down the line, categorised. We were all categorised in how we looked. And the only thing I asked my solicitor the day that I was told me to sit at home, like you said to Morris, he didn't. And I said to him, what did I get for loss of opportunity? He says, what do you mean? And I said, you know, there's lots of opportunity down there. And there's, did I get anything for that? And he said, no. And I said, well, go back in and fight for me. And he says, because I said, I think there was 20 points. It could have been 30 and could have been 15. I don't know. But for every point you got $2,000.
Right.
€2,000. So he came back and about an hour later he rings me and he says,
I just say at this point, Miriam, I don't want to put you in a situation where you're purging yourself for causing yourself any.
Yeah.
No, but just be careful now, because
you
signed an NDA and that includes not disclosing how much you received and all of that.
Yeah. Are human rights, like, we weren't informed properly. There was a violation of our basic human rights.
And I think, Damien, was that I got 3 points then for loss of opportunity. So I rang him back and I said, how can you give me 3 out of a possible 20 or 30? You either have it or you don't. He said, you better take what you have, because if you exceed this, your money will be dropped.
Yes, Morris. Yeah. And I have a couple of breaks to take as well. And Richard is there as well. Richard, thanks for hanging on.
I wanted to say,
do that and then we'll take a break and come back to Richard. Yes, Morris.
I mean, like, you turned around and you said earlier, your money wasn't enough. It wasn't. But the government promised us that our children, our grandchildren, would get education by the government. They promised us housing. They promised us medical cards. What they didn't promise us, and they have broken every one of those promises.
And by signing the NDA, just to get to the bottom of this, Morris, were you kind of warned that that money could be taken back off you, or you could be threatened?
I was told that I'd have to pay every penny back, and I was told that I would face a jail sentence.
If you did what?
If I told anybody my story, first of all, and if I disclosed how much I got through the redress.
And you've done a bit of that today now. Do you know that?
I've done a bit of that, but I didn't do the most important part, and that will tell you the figure I got. But you see, the thing about it, Damien, you have to understand, and the listeners have to understand, is that the groups that are out there supposed to be fighting for us, they put us the wrong way because they got funding by the government.
People often wonder, you know, how many people were in industrial schools, how many people appeared in front of the redress board. The figure I have here, wait for it, 15,579 claimants. And the bill was 1.5 billion or thereabouts. Now includes a lot.
And what about the ones that died before the mandatory laundries and the redress?
Yeah.
What about the ones that are dying now? Yeah. I mean, like, there's only 7,000 roughly left of us now, right?
I know. Listen, stay there, will you? Because I want to take a break. And Richard, I'll be with you after this.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Just the Section 28 of and Section 34 of the Residential Institution Redress Act 2000, it prohibits anyone from publishing information that identifies an applicant, their award, an institution, or any person that perpetrated the abuse they suffered in residential care. But what Redress, the TV documentary last night and tonight, is actually doing, and you could say in the public interest, is giving some voice to the survivors who feel that the trauma that they suffered as a result of the appearing in front of the Redress Board needs to actually be told. Now, Richard, again, I'm just letting you know that law. You signed an NDA as well.
I did, Damien. I signed me what was left of my life away that day, and I remember leaving the building worse than I went into it, because through my solicitor, I was expecting an apology to say they were even sorry. I got nothing like that after, Damien. I left the building actually worse than I went into it. Miss Liz had now done her best. She was against me accepting the offer. But I said, I just can't come back here anymore. I'm not apologising today. I'm not going to get an apology the next time I come in. So I did leave Damien. I put my hand up and I just signed the documents or whatever you wanted signed. And, you know, I regret it today, because I did sign my life, what was left over to them. On that day, I went over to sign them documents, you know.
You sound broken, Richard. I hope you're okay.
No, Damien. I know I made a terrible mistake.
You made no mistakes. You didn't do anything wrong, Richard.
Yeah, but Damien, that's the way they made me feel that day I left. When I left the building, that's the way I left, Damien. You know, I left. I thought they were going to say, like, okay, well, sorry, we didn't. What happened to you that day was bad, and we, you know,
okay.
Just overcome.
I know. Compose yourself, Richard.
I apologise for that.
No, you don't. Stop apologising, will you? You don't have to apologise for anything at all, Richard. I just hope you're okay and you're happy enough to talk.
It was a bad day going over, Damien. It was a bad day, and. Now, I had my family with me. Now,
good.
You know, and they knew that day that I actually left a little bit more worse than I went in, Damien, you know.
And Richard, but can I ask you what age you are now, when you went in and when you left the industry?
I went in 1966, Damien, and I left in 1969.
And those 3 years... are etched into your mind to the point that you sound like you do now, still broken, upset.
Well, yeah.
Have you been able to get on with your life? Has the experience of the redress
No. I have to say no. I worked, Damien, but I've never been able to get on in the job. I've never been able to do anything because. I just, you know, I can't. I can read, Damien. I can put my hands, but I couldn't take sums or do homework, or and I still can't. I'm suffered good jobs, Damien.
No, but
I'm afraid.
Richard, can I ask you? Have you people there with you?
Yeah, Damien, my wife is here with me. Yeah.
Ah, that's good.
Now, Damien, it's just that in my job today that I do, I had great opportunities, Damien.
Yeah.
Put in front of me, but I couldn't. Take them because of not being what you called them, not being able to do
I know.
To what was being put in front of me, you know.
But Richard, look, after what you've been through, I'm not a counsellor or psychiatrist, but I'm just listening to you there. I'm delighted that you found somebody, you know, to marry and have their loving and caring for you. That's a great thing. A lot of people don't have either, you know. And the other thing, don't be, it's very difficult, like to say, not to be hard on yourself, but it's horrific to hear what that abuse, how it manifests itself even to this day in 2020, that you feel so broken.
Yeah. well, I get on with my life, game, and I have a lovely family. And,
good.
You know, of course, I don't tell them about how
But what do you think the redress board could have actually done to have in some way eased the pain, healed some of the wounds? What were you looking for from the redress board?
I got the impression that I think they thought at the end of the day we'll throw money at them and that'll make them better. That's what they thought. That's the way I felt going in that day.
Did the government apology through Bertie Ahern make any difference? The acknowledgement of what went on?
Not to me, Damien, because I didn't get anything from the board in writing. They wouldn't give me that. They said that's not going, never going to happen. So, you know, I have to say no, Damien. Right. It didn't really.
Did you watch the programme last night? Will you watch
it
tonight?
Damien, I did watch it tonight. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Richard, thank you so much for coming on the air today. I really appreciate it.
I wish
you nothing but the best, and do your best to try and cherish what you have there. And I'm delighted to know that you're not alone, and that's great.
Yeah,
and,
I do that every day, Damien.
Good man.
I have people there.
Good man. Thank you so much, Richard. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Damien.
Thanks a million.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Not a pleasure, of course, to hear those stories again, but it is a pleasure to talk to those survivors and to hear them and listen to their eloquency talking about the horrific abuse that they suffered. And redress tonight, RT1 television at 9:35. Today's programme was produced by Lisa Marie Berry. Ray Darcy is next.